Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee. Happy Monday. Well, a few things happened this past week that I think we really need to talk about. I had planned and still want to discuss something that I've always been very mystified by, and that's called Munchausen's syndrome. It is an affliction where people pretend to be sick. Now, varies considerably from hypochondria. So it just makes it, I don't know, even more confusing to grasp some of these stories that I've read. Apparently it goes way, way back to like the 1700s or 1800s. A man by the name of Munchausen would tell tales of things he had survived. And a doctor who started realizing there were people who thought of maladies to get them into a hospital emergency room that were not true. So it's considered psychiatric. It's considered, a mental illness, if you will, although they don't ever use that terminology, mental illness. But it is written up in psychiatric books. The one that bothers me more, however, is the Munchausen by proxy, because I've read books, some were fiction, some were true, about women who have actually wiped out their entire family by making them ill because they enjoyed the attention that having a really, really sick child afforded them. So, but I think that it's interesting because it's really still not totally understood, and I think that's one of the things that makes it so interesting. But first, because of the news this weekend, there were some more deaths amongst our young people. And I've written something on Renee's Heart to Heart page that kind of sums it up. Well, more outrageous news about kids killing kids. It makes my heart hurt. Why? No one really knows. How can that be? Beautiful kids, all friends, and even related. I can't imagine. I guess they can't either. The air is heavy in this community. People are probably struggling to breathe. Hopefully, some will survive. We'll see. But will we ever know why? Let's talk about this today. So, this is horrible. This shooting that took place in a Washington school. This is horrific. So, but I want to bring in Shell so we can go over this particular article together, and then we're going to touch on some of the information I learned about Munchausen's. Good morning, Shell.
Good morning, Reedy.
How are you?
Doing good. I'm about ready to sneeze, though, so I may be muting the phone in a second. Haunting me for about 5 minutes. I'm like, get over and done with before the show starts, but it's just teasing me right now.
yeah. That happens to me every now and then, too. I'll sit here for an hour and a half, and everything's fine, and then all of a sudden I have to sneeze or go to the bathroom, one or the other.
Party.
It's like, oh, my God, could timing be any worse? So I'm sure you, I'm sure that you saw the story about the kids in Washington and the second girl.
Actually, I didn't. I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, apparently it's in Washington, but it has a lot to do with an Indian reservation. A lot of these kids were family certainly friends, and adorable. I mean, the faces that are flashing on the screen are like the perfect shiny-faced, bright-eyed, beautiful teenagers. And the young boy who committed this horrible crime, his name is Jalen Freiberg. He was an athlete. He was homecoming king. It's just I'm gonna read a little bit of the story so that you know and everybody else knows a little bit more about it. And then I think we got to talk about this because all the things that we talk about on this show, of course, bullying is usually hardships brought on to other people through other people's efforts. And, of course, this is that as well. But this is one of the parents was interviewed this morning, and his son is in an intensive care part of the hospital there in Washington. He was shot in his face, so he can't talk. So he writes to his father, why did my brother do this to me? And he wasn't his brother, they're cousins, but that's how close they all felt with each other. So it's, I don't know, it's just incredibly sad. It's in Marysville, Washington. It says, Jalen Freiberg was well-liked and athletic, a football player named to his high school's homecoming court just 1 week ago. He was also facing problems, writing of some unspecified troubles on his Twitter feed. It breaks me. It actually does. And they took that from, but that doesn't say much. He could be talking about anything. The popular Marysville Pilchuck High School freshman opened fire in the school's cafeteria late Friday morning, a government official with direct knowledge of the shooting told the Associated Press. One girl was killed and four other young people, including two of the gunman's cousins, were badly wounded before Freiberg fatally shot himself. His motives remain unclear. Some students described Freiberg as a happy and social, even though he had recently fought with a boy over a girl. Shaylee Bass, a 15-year-old sophomore, said he remained upset about that, but she was stunned by the shooting. He was not a violent person, she said. His family is known all over town. He was very well known. That's what makes it so bizarre. Students said the gunman stared at his victims as he fired. The shootings set off a chaotic scene as students ran from the cafeteria and building in a frantic dash to safety, while others huddled inside classrooms at the school 30 miles north of Seattle. Marysville police declined to release the shooter's identity, with Chief Rick Smith insisting he did not want to dramatize someone who perpetuated a violent crime in a place where children should feel safe. Well, now that's silly because that's already done. But many students identified Freiberg as the gunman, and the identity was confirmed to the Associated Press by a government official who spoke on condition of anonymity because he was not authorized to speak to the media. Students and parents said Freiberg was a member of a prominent family from the nearby Tulalip Indian tribes and was a freshman football player. A week ago, he stood on the high school track during the team's homecoming game in a vest tie and white sash as he was introduced as a prince, according to the video recorded by one of the kids' parents. Marysville Police Commander Rob Lamoureux said the gunman died of a self-inflicted wound, but he could not provide more details. Three of the victims had head wounds and were in critical condition. Two unidentified young women were at Providence Medical Center. And 15-year-old Andrew Freiberg was at Harborview Medical Center in Seattle. Another victim, 14-year-old Nate Hatch, was listed in serious condition in Harborview. Family members told the radio station or the TV station that Andrew Freiberg and Hatch are cousins of Jalen Freiberg. Witnesses described the shooter as methodical inside the cafeteria. Isabella McKeesh, 18, was having lunch with a friend when she suddenly heard gunshots behind them. I heard 6 shots go off, and I turned and saw people diving under the tables. In my brain, I thought, run. So I left my backpack, my phone, and my purse, and I got out the door as fast as I could. Some students got hurt when they tripped and fell in the chaos, she said. They ran across an open field to the fence that circles the schoolyard and climbed over. She kept running until she felt safe and found a phone. I called my mom and said, what happened? And she said, stay where you are. I don't want to lose you. Brian Patrick said his daughter, a freshman, was 10 feet from the gunman. She ran from the cafeteria and immediately called her mother. Patrick said his daughter said the guy walked into the cafeteria, pulled out a gun, and started shooting. No arguing, no yelling. A crowd of parents later waited in the parking lot outside a nearby church where they were reunited with their children. Patrick said after the shooting that his other daughter, a senior at the school, was hysterical when she called him from her classroom. I thought, God, let my kids be safe, he said. Freiberg's Twitter feed suggested he was struggling with an unidentified problem. On Wednesday, a posting read, it won't last, it'll never last. On Monday, another said, I should have listened, you were right. The whole time you were right. Marysville Pilchuck High School has a number of students from the Tulalip Indian tribes. Ron Lukes, a youth counselor with the tribe, said Jalen Freiberg was from a well-known tribal family. They're really, really good people, very loving. Jalen was one of our good kids. State Senator John McCoy, a tribal member, said the tribal community was devastated. We're all related in one shape or form. We live and work and play together. Hundreds of people prayed and sang songs at a church vigil Friday night for victims and family members. The Oak Harbor High School football team, which had been set to play Marysville Friday night, lined the front row of Grove Church in their purple jerseys. The game was canceled, and Oak Harbor offered to give the win to Marysville. Pastor Nick Bumgard told the overflow crowd there was no script for reacting to Friday's events. One moment we're thinking we can do this, another moment we're thinking, how can we do this? So, a very, very, very sad story. And the worst part about it is, for what? And will anybody ever, ever, ever know? Obviously, he was upset about something, but it doesn't sound like it's, mind-blowing upset, do you think? I mean, I should have listened, or this will never last, or comments like that. That could mean a relationship. That could mean something somebody said to him. That could mean a feeling he has. The bad part about something like this, and if he wanted to end his own life, what leads a young person's mind to think there's going to be any questions answered by an act like this? That's what blows me away. I just don't, I can't think like that.
Well, first of all, that's an aberration for the mind to work that way, to think that you have to think that you're compelled to take out innocent bystanders. If he was that calm and that focused when he walked in, there was something absolutely, that had gone awry with the normal functioning of how the mind works, because that's insidious, you know, to even contemplate something like that. You don't know. I mean, there's too much unknown right now. That's very, very cryptic. You know, reading his Twitter messages. First of all, who was he talking to? Right? Was that directed at an individual that might understand the bigger picture? Because obviously there is a bigger picture here. There was something going on behind the scenes. Here you have a kid who sounded like he was fairly popular. He wasn't these kids being bullied or not bullied in an obvious way. We don't know if this was a family situation. We don't know if he got himself in the middle of something and didn't know how to get out. You know, there are some underlying crimes that run through different communities. Maybe he got himself involved in something and didn't know how to get out. My my question then is, why take out innocent people? If he felt he was in the middle of something that he couldn't tolerate, I still don't understand suicide, but at least it gives a reason. But why kill all these innocent people and then kill himself? You know, one being his own cousin. There's more questions with this story than there are answers, because there's none of the what we've seen in the past where they were into these killing games, or where you had a group of kids that kind of fed off of each other, or you had a kid that was all doped up on antidepressants and he was suicidal and had homicidal tendencies for years. You're not hearing any of that.
Mhm. Well, that's it, and it's kind of the issues that they talk about. Well, they don't really talk about any issues, but the what do you want to call it? Excuses, or the purpose behind this?
The explanation.
The explanation. Thank you. Is not. I don't know. It's not an explanation. It's just more questions that will never be answered. And, of course, the people now that have lost their children, another succumbed this morning, one of the girls. And for what? I know that sounds like a dumb question, but it is the question. For what? For why? For how come? What on earth was going through the head of this child? And again, I say this to everybody out there. If you are having a struggle that is that black and that deep and that hurtful to you and the people around you, the people that you love, the people that you care about, you got to talk. Tell somebody. A Twitter comment is like a joke. I mean, Twitter is just random comments out there. They're like mini blogs out there to everybody, and often they cause harm, Twitter comments, I think.
Well, but it's like
anything
else. That's
a whole other story.
I want to know where the other side of that conversation is, who he was talking to and what he was relating to them. Because if they're only finding these few cryptic comments, maybe there is a bigger conversation going on Facebook, or maybe there was a bigger conversation actually, like in person or on the phone, and then he was just Twittering as a broad reaction to a conversation. But he was in communication with somebody, otherwise he wouldn't have made those comments. My curiosity is, what were those comments directed to? What was he responding to, or who was he responding to, and what were they saying to him?
Well, see, that's the whole thing, though, about Twitter. What I see about Twitter is purely and simply comments. I mean, even on the Today Show, they're like mini blogs, Shell. They don't have to be directed to anybody. It's just feelings that people have that they put out there. They don't have to have another party that it's being sent to. It's not like messaging somebody, or a conversation that you have with somebody online on Facebook, or even emails. It's different. It's like, I'm up today. Let's see what today's going to bring. That's your Twitter.
What did he mean by you're right? That's not him. He's not saying I'm right. He's saying you're right. Who was he talking to? He was directing that at somebody else.
Well, they don't really say that. Let me look back here and see what the exact words were. It won't last. It'll never last. I should have listened. You were right the whole time. You were right. But that could be, that's cryptic as far as I'm concerned. That could mean anybody.
Okay.
That could mean everybody. That could mean somebody said to him, if it is about a girl, if we use our imaginations, maybe it was about a relationship that he thought he was,
I'm
growing
getting
and...
Yeah, I'm getting the impression that was personal.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for
He's
sure.
He's direct at that Twitter comment to somebody. that tried to explain something to him, and he must have argued it and said no and blah, 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 and then finally came to the realization that this person that said something to him about some situation was right, and whatever it was, when he came to face it, it devastated him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was something that happened that devastated him, and instead of talking it out, he felt the only way of, you know, but again, I mean, if he's upset with an individual, why take out a bunch of innocent people? Why, you know, I don't understand the proclivity for young people today to commit murder and suicide. It's so final. And on some level, we're not talking about little kids that don't understand what death is, that don't understand the permanency of death, you know, for this, you know, for who you are right now. So this is mind-boggling to me.
Mm-hmm.
And
you know, the comments, you know, like I always like to, there's almost 50 comments about this, and everybody has the same consensus, you know, that it's, and then they start picking on each other instead of, and don't stay with the issue at hand. But it, you know, everybody, school and mall shooting has become a common thing. Gun violence cannot be stopped until the government bans guns from the hands of all people except military and police on duty. Most Americans consider a gun as a basic need, even as food and drink, but gun is the most unwanted thing. Very thing that destroys the peace in society. Stop buying and selling guns. Good children come from good parents and homes. Whatever wrongs happen in the society, it all starts from home. Without a total change of lifestyle, family values, nothing good will ever happen, no matter how much we all try. Now, for me, that's pretty one-sided. I can pick a couple words in that paragraph that makes sense to me, but most of it is somebody who really doesn't understand the gist of the drama and trauma that this brings about. He's just looking at it from the outside looking in. But, you know, and a lot of people talk about the tragedy, but I don't ever see anybody they always want to lay the blame on an inanimate object, shall. They want to lay it on drugs or the gun or alcohol or money or all these inanimate objects, when in actuality, acts like this are done by people who are not inanimate.
Right.
We're alive. We have feelings. Right. We have opinions. We have the ability to do more than any inanimate object could ever even come close to. So it's really the fault of us. It doesn't have any... I'm not real happy about everybody being able to own a gun without very little, you know, reasoning for having it. But on the same token, I think it's one of the rights that you should have. So I have real mixed emotions about that. If you live in hunting country, guns are a part of your life by the time you're five.
Right. And I do think there should be more restrictions on. I'm kind of in the middle ground. I don't think guns should be banned, but I also don't think they should be as easy to get. And I believe wholeheartedly that if our government had the wherewithal, they could stop gun trafficking. I think a lot of times our government gets in bed with other factions for other political reasons that we as the common folk out here aren't made privy to, because I just find it unbelievable with the powerful forces that we have here that we can't stop gun running. It's ridiculous. You know who's making them. You know, you put stricter controls on where they get shipped to. It's like anything else. It's like, you know, it's like prescription drugs that have to get, you know, or money going to a bank. Unless there's a heist, guns should not be getting into the hands of criminals, you know. And the only time that this happens is when you see, very rarely do you see shootings like this happening with legalized guns. Somebody who has a permit, somebody who got the gun through normal channels. These type of shootings always happen with illegally obtained guns. So that part of it I agree with, that the gun trafficking should be stopped, not gun sales, because I think, you know, 90% of people that obtain guns through legal means are getting it just for sport or for protection, and they're not misusing them, and they are careful with them. Most shootings are from the illegally obtained gun, somebody who got it on the sly. They're not really concerned about the ethics of using the gun, or their intent is to use it for criminal behavior. So it's the gun trafficking is what needs to be stopped, not gun sales.
Well, and let's discuss the fact that in this particular story, and I read three, there's no talk about even where the gun came from.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't hear anything that said it was his dad's gun, it was his mom's gun, it was Aunt Tilly's gun. He found the gun on the sidewalk and decided he might need it sometime. They don't tell you where the gun came from. I would assume that's because they don't know at this point in time.
I don't think a teenager is allowed to have a gun because they can't make a contract, and you have to sign a contract to get a gun. I don't think a teenager is allowed to own a gun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which, if it was legally belonging to one of his parents, it wasn't kept in a... I'm not talking about a hunting rifle. I'm not talking about a recreational handgun. I don't think... I may be wrong about that, but I don't think a teenager can get a carry permit. Because you have to sign a contract.
You mean to have a concealed weapon. You're talking about having a concealed weapon. Yeah,
right.
I don't think they can either because of the contracts involved. You have to be, in some states I would imagine it's 18, in some states I would imagine it's 21.
Right. So if there's handguns.
But there's no talk about this at all, you know, where it came from or how we got it or anything. I just perused it again to see if I forgot something, and there isn't anything how he got hold of the gun. Friday. This happened Friday.
Wow. And what was the name of the school? It's in Washington, you said, right?
It's in Washington. It has a really funky name.
I know. I've tried to write it a couple of times.
Marysville. Marysville, just like it sounds.
Oh, okay.
Dash Pilchuck, which must be Indian. Pilchuck High School in Marysville, Washington.
Yeah, so the Pilchuck must be in honor of the local tribe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that's Washington State.
Yeah, Washington State.
Okay.
So, again, you know, it doesn't... And somebody else that I saw on TV that's not in this story, a young girl, said when he... Apparently, she watched for a minute, probably frozen in fear. It's always amazing how you never know how you're going to react. Some people have running instinct down pat. I am reminded of years ago, I'm walking down a country road, and I hear a loud noise, and I turn around, and coming right toward me is a car. Flipping end over end, long end over long end, not rolling on its side, but end over end. And Shelley, I just stood there and watched it. I mean, it could have come right into me and flattened me, right? And I remember thinking to myself, what is wrong with you? Get the hell out of the way. So I don't think you ever know, you know, how you're going to react in a scenario like that. But one of the young women that they interviewed, said she made the observation that he stared at people eye to eye. There was no conversation, but he stared at them eye to eye before he shot them.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's deep, whatever it is. And, of course, you know how we all are, honey. You never know how deep a cut can be made in somebody's psyche. You just never, ever know. With sometimes the very, very smallest knife, right? We've learned that a million times. So other people may have even been witness to something that occurred with this young man and thought it was, you know, oh, that's happened to me before, or that's a part of growing up, or that happens to everybody. But you just never know how deep you're going to cut any individual, because we're all so different. Which, we'll keep an eye on this story and keep posted. I mean, it's obviously over. The only thing that I can say now is we send all kinds of prayers and good energy to these, the few kids. Some, I guess, are in good condition but still hospitalized, but there's a couple that are still in critical condition.
So two of those have died, one on the scene and one afterwards, or it's just
I think it ended up being, you know what, I'm just sitting here trying to remember what the number said.
I thought it said one, and then it said that one of the girls, so I don't know if it's the same girl they're talking about that didn't survive at the hospital, or if that's the girl that they mentioned at the beginning.
No, one girl was killed at the scene and the shooter, and four other young people, including two of the gunman's cousins, which is still four, not six, were badly wounded. And now one of those girls that was wounded succumbed this morning, early this morning. So, yeah. And like I said, he apparently shot at their heads, which I maybe a really talented psychiatrist would have something to say about that, too, and the fact that he stared at their eyes, which was the input of someone else, so...
Yeah, well, to hear the fact that he stared at their eyes is sort of chilling. One other question before we move on. I don't remember if it was read or not. Are all the shooting victims, and then we know two of them were his cousins, but were all the shooting victims his friends?
Yes.
Or were some of them random?
No. They were all friends.
Wow. There's a bigger picture. They might be able to get more information from the survivors. It's hard for me to believe that there's not one of them among the group that doesn't know what happened with him recently, you know. And but regardless of what it was, because when you think about what teenagers can get involved, when you think about what adults can get involved in, there's nothing that is so traumatic and life-altering that could, you know, like sometimes, you know, you hear somebody murdering somebody else, and although it's a horrific act, you say, well, it's justifiable because of these underlying, you know, things that happened that led up to it. There's never anything justifiable about a murder-suicide in this way, and this kind of goes to what Izzy talks about in the book about that children have to be taught to have thicker skins. Kids are almost raised today to be extremely thin-skinned, where the least little thing just wrecks their world, and they're almost taught to be oversensitive, and they're almost taught that that's the right way to be. You know, don't let people talk to you this way. Don't let people get away with doing that to you. And it's a really, really bad message, because if a kid gets into a situation where he can't control how people speak to him, and sometimes it's just one person that sets them off, because they're taught to have unrealistic expectations from how people are going to treat them. And I don't know if that plays into this or not, but there was certainly something going on behind the scenes, and it is my belief, just based on a few little facts that we got, that there is at least one other person who knows what he was responding to or reacting to.
Well, that's going to find out. Of course, then you could be dealing with the fact that somebody does know too much and is afraid to say, because then they're afraid some of the blame is going to be laid on them. There's always that.
Right.
People
right.
Who are good people often feel responsibility and often are not sure how they're going to be accepted. If they say, oh, yeah, I knew that he was feeling that way, and people are going to look at him and say, then why the hell didn't you do something? Or why didn't you tell me? Or why didn't you do this? And then the guilt is going to be overbearing for that person, too. So a lot of people, I think, I think we've seen this before, you and I, in our personal lives, and certainly with some of the things that we've talked about on the show, that people will kind of fade into the woodwork if they're afraid that it is possible that they could have made this outcome a little bit different. And
also be curious to find out as to whether or not this boy, and then, now they say he was like in football or something. I mean, he was an athlete. Did I remember that correctly? Yeah. I'm wondering if he got into any drugs at any point, either performance-enhancing drugs, or, you know, you hear he's on an Indian tribe, and I know that sometimes they do vision quests and things like that, and these are very, very spiritual practices. But maybe he got a hold of, because they do use some mood-altering substances. I don't want to call them drugs, but they use different things to take them on. I mean, these are Indian practices, and they're usually done very, very spiritually and in a controlled setting. I'm wondering if, as this story unfolds, we're going to find... I'm trying to find a reason why his mind would have snapped and gone in such a deeply dark and disturbing place as to actually kill people he knows and then take his own life, especially because he didn't seem to have those dark tendencies. This looks like something that happened without any warning, almost, with him. Some of these other stories we read about, it was almost like somebody should have known as it was evolving, because there were people that were disturbed by the behavior, a lot of these other school shooters. It's like there was stuff going on. It's like, wow, why didn't anybody stop it before it happened? In this particular case, it seems to be void of warning signs, you know, unless the story unfolds with more. But right now, the initial story, there doesn't appear to have been any warning signs with this kid. So I'm wondering if he tried something or did something, and it kind of warped the way his mind works. And because that's the bad thing on drugs, is that things don't look right to you anymore. You know, you get paranoid, you get, it can release all kinds of very, very insidious emotions that can drive people to commit murder and other unspeakable crimes like that.
Well, there is no conversation about that, and I'm going to assume that maybe some of the records in regard to autopsies and things like that, especially for the young man who committed this act, maybe that will still be to come. But it's also possible that without drugs, without anything, there was a disconnect. And there was a breaking point to the continuum in this young man's brain and body. And that happens too. So I don't know. I just think it's horribly sad. My heart goes out to this community, this big family, this... the sadness. I mean, you know how it is when one person gets hurt, when one person is in such a dire situation. Imagine, really don't imagine, because you don't need to go there, but I can imagine that this must be horrible in that small town at this point in time. So our prayers and our good energy and good wishes that they can heal and have this just be one of those things that there are no reasons for, which is another thing to let go of. I know it would be for me. So, but it brings me to this other subject, which is also mind-boggling, in my opinion. Mind-boggling. Because every story, the week that we talked about mental illness, we touched on Munchausen syndrome. And I've read books. Some were based on truth, but fiction books, fiction writing, but they were taken from real stories. There was one, something like The Hand That Rocks the Cradle, or the something along those lines, where a woman actually, you know, was the reason for the illnesses that took the lives of 8 of her children.
Wow.
I tried to find on the internet, and there's just so many I couldn't pick through them, but some of them are very similar. But I found this to be very interesting because I had no idea. this is going to be amazing hearing say these names, too. But it goes back to the 18th century, Shell. And it was named after this man, Hieronymus Carl Friedrich von Munchausen, was an 18th century German baron and mercenary officer in the Russian cavalry. On return from the Russo-Turkish Wars, the baron entertained friends and neighbors with stories of his many exploits. Over time, his stories grew more and more expansive and finally quite outlandish. Munchausen became somewhat famous after a collection of his tales were published. In 1794, at the age of 74, Munchausen married Bernadine Brunn, then 17 years old. It is said that on their wedding night, the baron retired early and his bride spent the night dancing with another. In 1795, Bernadine gave birth to a son. Following the birth of this child, it was whispered that the life of the Munchausen child will likely be short. The boy, named Paul, died at approximately 1 year of age under suspicious circumstances. Almost a century later, an unusual behavior pattern, a young man, recognition in the writings of Sherkot in 1877, he described adults who, through self-inflicted injuries or bogus medical documents, attempted to gain hospitalization and treatment. He called this condition mania operativa passiva. 74 years later, in 1951, Asher described a similar pattern of self-abuse where individuals fabricated histories of illness. These fabrications invariably led to complex medical investigations, hospitalizations, and at times, needless surgery. Remembering Baron von Munchausen and his apocryphal tales, must be unbelievable tales, Asher named this condition Munchausen's syndrome. Today, Munchausen's syndrome is recognized as a psychiatric disorder. The American Psychiatric Association Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Disorders describes it as the intentional production of physical symptoms. Then, of course, we have Munchausen syndrome by proxy. This is the one that's the scariest for me. The fact that people do things to themselves to get attention, make themselves ill. I've read stories of women way back in the 1800s and the early 1900s, because they were always treated as second-class citizens, actually went to this realm of having the vapors and needing to be in bed, and you know, especially wealthy women who could have somebody do their bidding, but they would actually feign illness just because they got treated better. And so I always thought that was some kind of hypochondria. But apparently hypochondria, after I kind of researched that a little bit, is totally different. That's when you really believe. Hypochondria is when you really believe you have these issues. You read about them and you can compare them to yourself and believe that you are suffering from this and from that. So it is a bit different. Whereas
hypochondriacs will hear someone say they have something, or they hear something on the news, and then all of a sudden, they're like, oh, my God, I'm going, and all of a sudden they think they have it, because they start feeling all the symptoms, you know, and then they never have it. If they go and they get checked, they don't have the thing they're being checked for, but they run through it, and they're constantly thinking that they're coming down with some dreaded disease. As they hear the litany of symptoms that go along with it, and all of a sudden they have every symptom. you know. But then they always test negative because they really don't have that thing. They just think that they're experiencing the symptoms, you know, because a lot of times they won't feel anything unless they've read an article or heard a news report, and then all of a sudden they have all those symptoms. So it is mentally stimulated, let's say.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I'm sure that it goes pretty deep in how they can believe that about themselves when they're otherwise healthy. But I've read where people have actually manifested an illness by, you know, by believing for so long that they have it. So, you know, mind over.
Yeah, that's psychosomatic. Yep.
Uh-huh. Exactly. So the Munchausen syndrome by proxy, of course, like I said, is the scarier one for me. And it's called MSBP, which is Munchausen syndrome by proxy. It was coined in 1976 after four children who were so severely abused they were dwarfed.
Oh, boy.
And in 1977, this doctor, Meadow, described a somewhat less extreme form of child abuse in which mothers deliberately induced or falsely reported illnesses in their children. He also referred to this behavior as Munchausen syndrome by proxy. Over the years, alternate terms such as Poles syndrome, which is after the baby that was born to Munchausen, and Meadows syndrome have been suggested. However, these terms never gained popularity, in contrast to its adult namesake, the American Psychiatric Association, does not consider Munchausen syndrome by proxy as a psychiatric disorder. Tragically, Munchausen syndrome, that's such a mouthful, MSBP victims are usually kids, and the perpetrators are almost always parents or parent substitutes. If and when victims are hospitalized, they may be subjected to multiple and at times dangerous diagnostic procedures that invariably produce negative or confounding results. When the victim and the abuser are separated, however, the victim's symptoms stop. When confronted, the abuser characteristically denies any knowledge of how that child's illness occurred. So, interestingly enough, I had this in my workbook to talk about this week because I have seen in my interaction with other people I have to word this very carefully, a need to be recognized, a need to be valued. Well, the attention is the biggest thing, I agree. But along with the attention, the kind of attention, the type of attention, is always one of praise. It's not one of fault-finding. It's not one of, I don't know, is this your fault kind of blame? It's more of, oh, my God, you poor thing. How could this happen to you again, you know? You've already lost two children to crib death or to this. This is all the stories I've read. This is how it goes. That's how it plays out. And sometimes these women move around. And the one story I read with the eight children, some of those children were her natural children. Some of them she adopted because people thought she was such a great mom that they would let her adoptions go through. And most of these people that are found to be involved in this kind of action are women. It's rare. Matter of fact, I couldn't find any cases, although it was kind of insinuated that both parents can be involved, but I didn't read any cases like that. It's mostly women, and it's mostly the attention. And some women don't have this syndrome until they go through, God, I hate to even say this out loud, until they go through the death of the first child, which could be done purely because that's the way it was meant to be. And they had nothing to do with
it. Do you remember the one Law and Order episode? And it was based on a true story. I don't know what true story it was. But there was this young girl in the hospital, a young child. I think she was 10 or 11 years old. She was going through cancer treatments. So she had lost all her hair already. And then one of the tests they performed, they found out she didn't have the actual cancer. They were treating her, but she had all the symptoms of it. And when they did further tests on her, they found out that she was actually being poisoned by her aunt. She was living with her aunt at the time. And the aunt was giving her either arsenic or antifreeze or something in very, very small doses in her food to poison her to mimic these symptoms. Because she got all kinds of, you know, she had to care for the child at home, and she was getting all this attention. People praising her, and, oh, my God, I can't believe you're doing this, not even your child, this is your niece. And something had happened to her parents, evidently, and the aunt got her. And this went on for a year, and she did permanent damage by the time they found out that she didn't have what she was being treated for, between the poison she was giving her and some of the initial chemotherapy she went through, the child had suffered some permanent injuries. But they found out and they arrested the woman and all that. And she was like in shock when they arrested her. What are you talking about? I love her. Don't you see how I take care of her? Do you see all the money I've spent on her? She even bought a hospital bed and had it at her house. And it's like, you know, she almost went into debt to care for this child, but she was just lavishing in the... all the attention she was getting and the praise and how people thought she was such a good Samaritan and all this to do this for her niece. Meanwhile, she had created it from the get-go.
Yeah, well, and that seems to be that first taste of that attention and that praise and that, I don't know, being recognized as this really, really wonderful mother is what feeds this issue. And a lot of times it happens when the child is so young, they can't talk. They can't tell anybody. In one of the stories I read, a 9-month-old boy was repeatedly admitted to a children's hospital because he had apnea. He couldn't breathe. At 7 weeks of age, he experienced his first apneic event, and his mother administered mouth-to-mouth ventilation. Spontaneous respiration returned, and he was hospitalized for a little while, treated, and discharged with a home monitor. During the next 9 months, the child experienced 10 similar events, and 7 more hospitalizations. 8 of the events required mouth-to-mouth ventilation. All of these episodes occurred while mother and child were alone, and only the mother witnessed the actual events. 2 episodes occurred in the hospital, but again, with just the mother in the room. Unfortunately, despite many tests and surgical procedures, the apnea persisted, and his growth slowed. Because of his persistent apnea and failure to thrive, he received home nursing care. During these home visits, several nurses observed that the baby would refuse to eat in his mother's presence. If she left the room, however, he would eat. In time, both medical and nursing staffs became increasingly suspicious that the mom was somehow responsible for her child's apnea. To better observe mother-child interaction, he was moved to a hospital room equipped for covert audio-visual surveillance. On the 6th day, the video clearly recorded the mom bringing on the apnea by forcing the child into her chest, which caused him to lose consciousness. He became limp, experienced a failing heart rate. Then she placed the baby back on the bed, called for help, and began mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. The hospital immediately informed Child Protection Services and police authorities who reviewed the recording. Shortly thereafter, a team consisting of a physician, a nurse, a social worker, and a police officer confronted the parents. At first, the mom expressed disbelief at the suggestion that she smothered her child. But when she was informed of the video, she made no comment and she was arrested. So she was an occupational therapist and she had three other boys.
Oh, boy.
And late in her pregnancy with this baby, she worked at an early intervention program for developmentally delayed children. During many of the baby's hospitalizations, she appeared caring and concerned, but emotionally distant. Clearly, she was the dominant parent who made all the decisions regarding medical treatment. She ended up pleading guilty to felonious third-degree assault. At the time, she stated, "The only time I ever caused my son to stop breathing was in the hospital." She received 3 years probation, during which she was to receive psychotherapy. If she successfully completed psychotherapy, the felony charge would be reduced to a misdemeanor. She also had to live apart from her children and can only visit them in the presence of an adult. The child had no further apnea and at 24 months of age appeared vigorous, healthy, and normal. Eventually, the family was reunited. Lots of stories like this. Lots of stories like this. And almost all of them, even though the father, it appears as though sometimes the father would be involved, but only when it came to reviving. So he was led to believe that this was happening accidentally all the time, you know, that there was something really wrong with the child. And a couple of the other stories I read, that's what would happen. And she would scream for the father, and the father would try to do something, but ultimately the mom would be the saver. But then, once in all the stories, the same thing happens when the hospital gets, there's a distance, you know. I mean, mom kind of like steps back because she's already achieved her glory, you know. So it's pretty scary, I think. And again, I have got to be honest, I've seen these kind of things in people who almost and want to share everything with anybody who wants to listen. You know. So, we're almost out of time, but these two stories, I debated doing them separately this week, but I thought it's a good reflection of how people think. We have this young boy who makes these ominous Twitter mini blogs about something that nobody else seems to, at this point in time, which will probably change, have any idea what the hell he was talking about, to centuries now of moms in particular who revel in the attention of either making their child sick or making themselves sick.
Right.
So it is about how other people see us. It is about what kind of appreciation we derive out of our lives. It is about the interactions that we have with people. People who say they don't care what people think about them are either kidding themselves or blatant.
Right.
So I absolutely positively care about how people feel about me. Absolutely positively I do. I am hurt when I think somebody dislikes me for some reason. I am hurt if somebody doesn't want to be my friend because I'm fat. I am hurt if somebody doesn't want to be close to me because I have a big family and have lots of stuff going on in my life. Those things hurt me, and I'd be lying if I said otherwise. So I want everybody, though, to go out there and have a good day. Florida is chilly today in the 60s for us, and all those poor people that are already being snowed on are rolling their eyes at us right now, Shel.
That's right. So.
But tomorrow is Bullies to Buddies Day, and I think we can pull in some of these stories. It's all about treating other people like you want to be treated, and I can't say that enough times, even to myself. So if I would like it, I'll do it to you. If I wouldn't like it, I won't do it to you. There's a deal. Okay,
right.
So God bless everybody. Have a great day. Thanks a lot. Thanks, Shel. Talk to you
soon.
Thanks,
Rainey. Everyone in the morning.